Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
We had this vision, you know, for what we wanted to do, who we wanted to do it with. And so I'm just very, very happy, you know, that we can continue this process. I think we're in a really, really amazing place. I think you all, along with our fans, can kind of see what we've been building, what we've been working on. And anytime you're building something, you know, you want to see some semblance of where it's at or where it's going to go. I think we can all see that.
This is Dirt and Sprague.
Underneath one limb rises and turns over. Seven iron. 207.
Six iron yesterday, set up an eagle. Is this enough? It is! Oh, here it comes! The shot of a lifetime!
With Andy Dirt Johnson and Brendan Sprague.
The long journey is over. McIlroy has his masterpiece.
Dirt and Sprague on 1080, The Fan.
All right, 6:02 in the Rose City. Time for Dirt and Sprague on Portland's sports leader, 1080, The Fan. Good morning. Happy Monday, everybody.
What is happening?
Hello, friends.
Hello, friends.
Man,
welcome in.
Wow. What a sports weekend.
A sports weekend.
It was such a good sports weekend that you didn't clip me saying that the Blazers were going to kick the can on Chaunce down the road in the open.
I thought about
That's how busy it was.
There was too
and
much
was
going
like,
on. We didn't even have room for it to make fun of you. We don't have time for that today.
Like, no, I thought about it. I was like, oh, what day was that? Where was it? And I was like, no. There was just too much that happened.
That was the lead-in to the Masters that I wasn't ready for it. The press conference, the announcement, there's too much going on yesterday.
Didn't watch any of that.
That was like 8:45 Saturday morning or Sunday morning.
That was a Sunday night. Let's dive in. I don't got time for this crap, Blazers. Okay, we got a lot to get done today. We're focused on more important things, and we'll get to this later, all right?
Yeah, that definitely had the vibe. I went to the Hoop Summit festivities this weekend.
There you go.
Did you scout our future Blazers?
Quite a night for Jazzy.
Jazzy had a great game.
Yeah, more importantly, scouting the future WNBA players coming.
That's
well, I don't know when or why. I feel like they used to have an MVP for that game, and they don't do that anymore, but she would have been the MVP.
Yeah.
That's a little weird to not have an MVP for the game.
They used to do a most outstanding player.
They didn't have it.
Wow.
They didn't do it. Quick little story here, because I want to get to the Masters. So there's a local gym near my house that we sometimes go and play basketball at, and it's just like a person's property, and they have a gym. And anybody can sign up, and we go there. And she walked in, and we had one side of the court, and she had the other. This was like 3 weeks ago.
Just knocking down shots on the other side of the floor?
Just in there getting some work.
Yeah.
You know, run-of-the-mill facility. And I'm like, guys, you want to get a picture?
No, I don't want to. No.
Didn't want it.
What?
Wow.
We literally were right with there. We're both working out. Here we go. This is when you take the photo. Nothing.
She would have. That's one you remember for a long time. She might be the number one overall pick in the draft in a couple of years.
And we go to the Hoop Summit. And we watch her play, and suddenly they want to get to the rail. They want the five, and then can we get a picture? Come on,
please. Like, hey, autograph.
This would have been so
I'm
much
surprised
easier.
You didn't ask for a little run.
For like, what? Oh, no.
Yeah, come on. Let's play a little 1-on-5.
No, I have a big held belief. You leave athletes like that, you leave them alone. You let them do their workout.
You do.
Why would you bother them?
You wait till a moment when they're like, hey, workout's done, having
clearly
a sip
over.
Of water, we're talking after we just got our work done, and now, hey, can you just got 2 seconds for a picture? And she would have been totally cool with
but
that,
but she
I'm
was
sure.
great. All the ladies were great. They got photos and high fives, and they were really happy. I was like 6 rows behind the front, like courtside seats.
Look at you.
We got really good seats.
Nice seats for the Hoop Summit, you know. Balling on a budget.
And I was trying to predict whether he was getting the extension or not by reading body language.
You were sitting right behind Joe and Chaunce. Were Joe and Chaunce there on
Joe
Saturday night?
Joe and Chaunce were about 5 rows ahead of me. And so I'm looking ahead, and Chance is coming out first. He's getting, you know, autograph requests, and oh, it's Chauncey Billups. And he sits down with his family, and then Joe comes out later at the back end of the ladies' game. They're both coming out for the men's game, and they sat next to each other, but they didn't. There was a seat between them, no communication. And I'm like, he ain't coming back.
He's not getting an extension. This thing's over.
If he was getting an extension, wouldn't they be talking even a little bit?
Nothing.
Not even, barely even a look at each other.
Would have been a really funny tweet on Saturday night. Internal sources, a.k.a. me, sitting five rows behind them, indicate an icy relationship in Portland.
The body language doctor says.
Body language says no deal's getting done.
Divorce. And then the next day, they have this press conference, and I'm like, oh,
we're great friends, right. Everything's going awesome, we love working together. Hey, do you know we're both from the same town in Colorado? Do you know that? We went to high school together.
I do love that.
They're so tight, they don't
so
need
tight.
To communicate.
That's
it's
right.
all telepathic.
Well, look, in all fairness,
all
like, body language really doesn't
number
matter.
Number 15, they're just doing winks. Yeah. Hey, that number 14's pretty good.
I have liked the idea that, like, they grew up together. I'm like, no, they didn't. One was clearly better than the other. Yeah. The one knew about the other more than the other knew about them. I think in his press conference, they were like, played a playoff game. And I think Chauncey's like, oh, we did?
We did?
And I'm like, they're not like childhood buddies.
No. That's when you remember if you're Joe Cronin, you don't remember if you're Chauncey Billups. Chauncey Billups won an NBA championship playing.
Right.
He doesn't remember, I'm sure, who he played
That's
against
like
in high
me
school.
Saying, Damon Stoudamire and I remember a high school playoff
right.
game. No, Damon does not.
No, he's not.
I remember it.
You played against him because he went on to the league.
No,
and
he was lining
that.
Up dates by the time I got in the game. So,
yeah, he was.
What are you doing after the game? What are you doing after the game? What's
Students
going on?
And teachers.
Exactly.
I mean, I don't even know why they're at the Hoop Summit. We're clearly going to be making the playoffs next year. So, what's the point in scouting these guys, anyways? We don't need draft picks anymore. The future's. I mean, what are we doing?
That demands a kid, man.
What are we analyzing and scouting? There's no point to even be there. We might as well trade that pick because it's going to be the 28th pick in the draft next year.
Well, I said all that to basically just say busy little sports weekend where that
was kind
of on the back burner because you're the golf nerds.
Let's go, baby.
Golf nerds.
Let's go, baby.
I asked the poll question last night, and I understand the response.
Yeah.
And I actually would say it's even hard to comp in some ways of how it registers. I didn't want to be overreactive, but I'm in my garage, and I'm like telling my wife, I think this is the best Masters I've ever watched in my life.
It's in the conversation. It's so hard to compare because it depends on what storylines matter to you, right?
Yeah, like I know.
Jack in 86, won, Tiger winning the
See,
first
I remember,
time.
I mean, the coverage was far less. You only really saw the back nine. It was like 2 hours on Sunday, but I remember Jack's charge in 86.
Yes, sir.
I wasn't alive, so I'm not counting
right.
that in my
head. Phil breaking through and winning his first major was a big one when he jumped and finally did it after all the years of falling short. It's hard, but what I will say from yesterday is I'm as a Rory stan.
Yeah, I've learned that about you.
Can we just make it a little bit easier, buddy? Can we, like, is that necessary? Like, is really?
That was
really?
Wasn't that his entire career encapsulated
it almost
in
was.
19 holes?
I don't know if I can ever remember a final. To your point on the excellence of it, I don't know if I can ever remember a final round in which it felt like somebody won and lost the tournament so many different times.
Yeah.
Like, two holes in, you had the... Oh my God! He's doing it again.
Yeah.
He's gonna blow it. He stood on the first tee box with a 2-shot lead. He stood on the third tee box down by one. Then on the fourth tee box he was back up by one, and on the fifth tee box he was up by two or three. And you're like, okay, he kind of settled in. This thing's essentially over. And he got the break on 11 with the ball not going in the water, and you thought, maybe it's going to be his day.
That's like, it.
That was the last time. Like,
hits the tee shot on 12, puts it on
over.
The back of the green.
Back of the green, he's fine. 13,
and
he's playing
hits
safe.
The worst chip shot of maybe his life on 13.
I don't think it's a maybe. I think
that
it
was
is.
That was one of the worst golf shots I have ever seen hit. Not for Rory, just in general in terms of that's not putting it in the water on 12 and not gauging the wind correctly. That was just a shanked chip shot.
It was a missed layup.
I mean,
it's
just
a missed layup for those guys.
Hit it
right?
to the middle of the green,
yes.
and you two-putt for a par, and the tournament is essentially over at that point, and instead you made double bogey.
You know, in a weird way, I thought it was the best. Look, I'm a big Tiger stan, and 2019 will always remain one of the most special sports moments that I got to watch. And I understand everybody picking that, or maybe you go 86 with Jack. I can't speak to the 86 Masters. I haven't rewatched it. But of the ones I've watched, from just the leaderboard and the random, oh, now he's in contention. Now he's dropped down. Now he's leading. Now he has dropped down.
Yeah.
The back and forth nature. I went golfing yesterday morning before the Masters really got going.
Look at you, golf fever. There beautiful morning for it.
It was. I got home at 10:45. So I got home perfectly in time. Shower. Boom. Here we go.
Here we go.
And I'm watching this whole final round. We're texting. I couldn't believe you were responding. And I'm taken away by how much pressure is riding on this guy. And I kept coming back to what I said last week. The mental side of that, oh my God, he'll never be more maybe mentally tested ever in a golf tournament than he was on Sunday.
Yep.
And boy, does watching him play, as great as he is, did that round not encapsulate the sport for all of you guys?
Yeah.
Of just, hey, look at me, I got a birdie.
I got it going.
There you go.
Got a double. I went in the water.
Well, like, chipping into the water there. What the hell was that?
Hole the hole. Oh, my God. I had such a great shot.
Yeah. I blew the birdie putt. Like, even, on the same hole. I mean, some of the shots, to hit the shot he hit on 15 is one of the most remarkable golf shots that I've ever seen. And then he missed the eagle putt.
200 yards with a 7-iron
207.
That he bent it. Oh, my God.
Hooked it around the corner. He
the
put himself.
The tree shot?
Yeah. On 7, and then he missed the birdie putt.
And they're saying, he says he's got a gap. And everybody's like,
what?
Where's the gap? And then he hits it a mile high and lands it, you know,
eight, nine.
That's why it was so funny.
Whatever
where,
it was.
You know, like, there's something about Scottie Scheffler, and this is a credit to Scottie Scheffler, that he's almost a boring winner, both in terms of personality and the way that he plays. Like, he's just
fairways
so
and greens,
stable.
Yeah.
It's just steady Eddie, and you're like, he's not going to make a mistake. There's not a... That's the chaos. With Rory, rooting for him to win a major is almost like you're driving a car and you just throw the steering wheel out. You're just like, let's see where we go from here. I don't know. And I've never seen a round where somebody hits so many incredible golf shots, whether it was approach on 7, the tee shot on 4 that he birdied on a ridiculously hard par 3, the shot on 15, the shot on 17 that went to a foot. I've never seen somebody hit so many incredible golf shots while simultaneously hitting so many terrible golf shots at the same time. It was such a weird mixture. Like, one, to the chip that he hit on 1 that led to a double bogey was horrendous. The missed putts after great shots. The approach on 18 into the bunker. You just put that thing on the green. The tournament is over. You 2-putt. See you later. You got a green jacket. Instead, he duffs it into the bunker on the right and still almost made the putt. I've never seen somebody be so hot and so cold in the same round of golf.
This was maybe one of my favorite. And what I loved about it, Spieth, I think it was Friday. I want to say it was Friday. Spieth on Friday was on 18, and he had hit a good drive, but it clipped a branch, and he kind of got screwed with where it landed and was lying. And they went live on Spieth and his caddy talking. He's like, this is effing bullshit. And I'm just like, yes, I need more of this.
Yeah, so 4's out the window because he couldn't get it to the green.
He did not care or even know that that camera was hot, that he was like, we could hear him, but he's just like openly telling you, this is effing. And his caddy's like, all right, move on.
We got to move on. So can't do anything about it now.
But I love that. I just love that coverage. So I love the audio we get from time to time on the course. I love to hear them talking about what club. And like, I kind of feel like golf should be leaning a little more into it. But I understand the cursing nature of broadcasting. I thought this was one of the all-time, you hear the guy talking on the course after the shot. This was on 17. He's hitting a very difficult shot, and this is what you hear.
Go, 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 go.
Be right, baby.
Go, go, go.
Yeah. And go it did.
And go it did.
What a shot for Rory McIlroy.
No, please go. The other thing is, if you don't have the shot tracer, when you're hearing the golfer do this.
Go.
Go. You're like, this is going to be a bad shot.
He didn't hit it. But I felt the only thing that kept me hopeful in that moment was that on 10, he dropped his... He thought he hit such a bad ball on 10 that he dropped his club.
He did.
And he hit it to 10 feet and he nailed the birdie putt.
He did,
All right, so that one turned out pretty good. So he didn't feel like he maybe got all of it. There's also a false front on 17 that he was maybe a half a yard away. If he hits that a half a yard shorter... That ball hits,
it
rolls off the front of the green, and he does not win a Masters because then he would have had to a birdie 18.
Yeah, and if he hits his eagle putt, he wins and rolls
it doesn't
his
matter.
Putt doesn't matter.
If he doesn't chip into the water on 13, it's over on the 14th tee box, essentially.
I want to come back and talk Masters, so it's going to be a very loaded, busy show today.
Yes.
There's a few things we got to shoehorn in here.
Well, there's a thing that happened this weekend that is a massive story, and it's we'll give some time to it. One of our guests will be on the program today.
Also a local school tied to it as well.
Yeah.
A local school.
Yeah. Indeed. You did not see that part of the report?
Maybe I missed I saw that part.
Maybe I missed that part. You saw that part?
Yes.
Damn, you saw that part? I didn't see that
Somebody
part.
Was the guy who shined the light on the story and what the guy was doing.
Oh.
Oh.
Oh. Look at that. A local tie. I love a good local
who
tie.
Who said, no, thank you. We're fine there.
You know, Rory is partners with Nike.
Yes, he is.
Who's in Beaverton. Ooh,
local guy won the Masters.
Local guy won the Masters yesterday.
How great was that Nike commercial?
It was okay.
Wow.
I need a longer...
You're a Nike guy.
I am. I need like a 2.5 minute emotional childhood video.
You went that long of one?
I got me club stand. To choking away.
Oh, there was a video
battling
clip.
Back.
He was on some show... When he was like 8 or 9.
An Irish reality interview
wedges
show.
Into the washing machine.
Like a little
machine.
Baby tiger did. Yeah.
I thought Nance kind of ruined that moment. Can I criticize Jim Nance from yesterday?
How dare you?
Oh. Okay, we got broadcaster on broadcast.
Look, I love Jim Nance, but
here.
He put a quarter in the ball machine. It's like, dude, this guy's been bogeying left and right. Can we not put the green jacket on him yet? Can we wait till he's on the green with a 2-putt and then start telling the childhood stories?
Can we also just acknowledge Nance was clearly going into the Butler's Cabin interview with, I'm going to make this bitch cry. That was the whole goal.
Talk about your parents, Rory.
Rory. Mom and Dad aren't here.
Yeah.
Where
I
are
thought
they?
Nance was going to start crying when he was telling
it felt like he was going to, yeah. A little
see, we got a
crying.
Lot on this. We're going to get in the Masters a couple different times today. The Blazers, big news over the weekend. We got a lot of audio to get to.
Future is bright. Everything's going in the right direction.
Hey, man. Anytime you improve on 4 wins from last year, you should extend everything.
You jump on that.
So we will get to all of it. Gunderson's going to join us at 7:30 for his Blazer takes. Grant Ramey will join us at 6:30 for the Nico departure between them and Tennessee. So we'll get to that. But back with more Masters. Where was that Masters rank for you? And were you rooting for Rory to become the 6th player to complete the career Grand Slam? We're back with Masters Talk next on The Fan.
Hi, this is Jill Schlesinger, CBS News business analyst, certified financial planner, and the host of the Jill on Money podcast. Beginning, middle, or end of the year, it's always a great time to take control of your financial life. And the Jill on Money podcast is here to help. Your questions make it possible for me to provide unconventional and entertaining insights on your money and, more importantly, on your life. Follow and listen to Jill on Money wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, welcome back in. Grant Ramey will join us. We'll go to Tennessee coming up. What is going on in Tennessee? They don't have a quarterback anymore.
No, they don't.
Rory wins the Masters. His first career green jacket. He completes the career Grand Slam. The 6th player. I guess got clarified. There was some miscommunication on the show last week on Wednesday about how many players had done the career Grand Slam, and I was citing the CBS article that said 5, so he was looking to become the 6th, and you had like 8.
I had 6, I thought.
Was it 6?
There was another old-timer that I don't know.
They
I don't
didn't
know
count
the
that old-timer.
Didn't count the old-timer.
So Rory's the 6th guy to complete the career Grand Slam, and he does it in the playoff against Justin Rose. And we got cuts, and I don't know if we'll get to the cuts in this segment. Got audio. We won't talk much about this. I wanted Rory to win. I was so captivated by it that I didn't even tune into the Clipper-Warrior game till the overtime period, and that was on a tiny screen. And as much as, like, I reacted to Rory's emotion, I did have a moment where I'm like, nobody's going to talk about how awful that's got to be Justin Rose.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, it's not just like, oh, he also lost in the playoff against Sergio in what, 2017?
17, yep.
It's that, like, everybody watching wanted Rory.
They did.
And then... If you watch, I watched his whole lead up, walking into the scoring and all that stuff. He sees his mates at the very end, a group of guys that are his friends, and they're giving him hugs and dapping him up. And he just kind of ends it with like, I got to go get my green jacket. And he turns around and Justin Rose is 4 feet from him. Yeah. And I'm just like.
The Ryder Cup teammates, good buddies for a long time. That
he doesn't hate him, but that's just got to be emotionally brutal for Justin
Rose. I mean, we talked about him after Thursday and Friday, too, that nobody has led more rounds of the Masters without a green jacket than Justin Rose. Like, he's, he's done this before. He also finished in 2nd in the Open Championship, the last major of last year, to Xander Schauffele. So he's got back-to-back majors where he's been runner-up. that was the only silver lining. When he got into the playoff and Rory was in it, I obviously was in the camp of rooting for Rory. A silver lining would have seeing Justin Rose win his second major and first one in a very long time would have been pretty cool.
Well, I mean, if I would have told you, freeze frame, the end result of his shot in overtime, the second, you'd be like, well, good luck, Rory.
Yeah.
That Rory shot, the second one, is one of the greatest golf shots of our lives. Are we aware of this?
I mean, it's not that difficult of a shot, but considering the circumstances.
With the stakes
on the line.
125 out,
especially since he had just literally had the same exact shot.
Like
20 minutes earlier, he had the same shot, and he hit it into the bunker when he had a chance to win the tournament. And it was, I think all of the moments that he had throughout the day and the acknowledgement finally for him. You know, he's been in this weird spot. I loved his jokes afterwards of saying, what's the storyline going to be next year? Because you asked literally a week ago, hey, Masters week, we're all excited. What's the biggest storyline? It's easy. Is Rory going to win? That's the storyline every week at the Masters. No other golfer has to carry that burden every time they show up to Augusta being, will he finally win one? There's a lot of great golfers who have never won a green jacket. One who played in the final group yesterday and was terrible and is just going to kind of skate after the round that he played because he won a major more recently, even though he only has two in his career. To carry all of that weight and to have to sidestep all these different questions to then see the outpouring of emotions and the honesty from him about how hard that is, how big of a burden that has been for the last 11 years, especially considering the fact that in 2010 he had the tournament. He had it in his back pocket. He was going to win the green jacket, and then he double-crossed himself on 10, hidden in the backyard of a cabin, and all of a sudden he unraveled, and he hasn't been really relatively close to winning one since then.
There was a moment where Rose was on 18, and Rory had bogeyed, and the leaderboard had updated, and the crowd went crazy when Rory had bogeyed because they knew Rose could birdie to tie. And the crowd goes crazy on 18. And I thought it was a weird comment. The broadcaster, I forget who it was, but it wasn't Nance. It was one of the other ones like, huh, interesting. As if the crowd was like telling you, we just want Rose to win. I'm like, that crowd just reacts to they just want
excitement. They
wanted
want
what they got. They wanted a playoff. They wanted, and Rose delivering that birdie.
That long birdie putt on 18, man.
I mean,
unbelievable.
I don't know what you or Swag would say is the hardest thing you guys have accomplished non-work, non-parenting in your life. I don't know what that is. For me, it'd be like Hood to Coast. And like the emotions of Hood to Coast hit me every time I finish of like, I effing did it. It. I don't know what that is for you guys in your life, but like to watch him go through that round and actually end up on top of it, I'm always going to be interested in that side of sports and him able to do that. He said it yesterday in the press conference, like, that's the greatest golf moment of his life.
That's the best golf day of his career. And he's won four other majors leading into this. I think the interesting thing out of it will be, one, now that he finally gets this choke label off of his back and he finally makes the putt, he finally makes the tee shot, the approach shot on the playoff hole, knocks in the putt. Where does he go from here? You know, I saw this yesterday, and we got to call him out because he's the Skip Bayless of golf commentary. But Joe Fisher had a tweet yesterday with Rory McIlroy, and he basically said, it's about damn time, Rory. And I just chuckled when I read it because this is the way that a lot of people have talked about him, where I'm going to compare him to Phil Mickelson, but it's important to remember that he's not Phil Mickelson. He has four major championships.
Choke label's weird. For
it's
a guy
been
with
interesting that
those.
He like there's a statute of limitations on being elite or championships. Like imagine doing that to Mahomes in 5 years. He doesn't win a Super Bowl. It's like, yeah, it's about damn time you win another one, Mahomes. He's already got three of them. He's been to four or been to five. So the way we've discussed him has been funny. This wasn't his first major. It was the first one in a long time. There was a lot of pressure on him. But I think the apt comparison to Phil is he clearly acknowledged, and we'll get to all the audio today from Rory, how this has been hard, man. Like every time you don't win it, it's another pound on your back. It's another thing that you have to carry. And every time you come up short, whether it was St. Andrews, the 150th Open Championship, where he played outstanding golf. He just couldn't make a putt. And Cam Smith chased him down. Oh, my God. Couldn't miss a putt outside of 15 feet. He's draining everything left and right. He gets caught. He didn't play that bad of a round. The U.S. Open last year. If he makes two putts inside 3 feet, he wins the U.S. Open, and he's holding that trophy and the Masters. It's just he has been so close so many times to finally break that wall down and to now free himself up mentally. I think that's the comparison I will make to Phil, is that when he finally broke through and won, what was it, the 05 Masters, it was just an avalanche of wins that came after that because he was the guy who couldn't get it done. He had that pressure on his back that he was carrying in a lot of these tournaments, finally kicked the door down, and it was like, all right, how many are we going to rattle off now? And what did he end up? He ended up with six, I think, all the way to Kiwa Island a couple of years ago. That, to me, is the biggest storyline, is what does this do for Rory McIlroy now? The thought has always been, not if he'll win another major, just when he wins one. And now that he has, the first one of the year, the courses that are coming up the rest of the season, I genuinely believe this guy, who has been one of the best players on the planet for the last 20 years, could rattle off 4 to 5 more in the next 5 years.
We'll get back into the Masters. We got a ton of audio to get to, but a lot happened over the weekend, not just the Masters. We'll get to the Blazers at the top of the hour. Coming up next, a playoff team in college football has lost their redshirt freshman quarterback, who was set to come back after having an okay season and helping lead the Tennessee Volunteers to the playoff. What happened with Nico and Tennessee? Grant Ramey will join us at VolsQuest.com.
What's up, little psychos? I'm Investigator Slater, host of the Psychopedia podcast. Psychopedia is a true crime podcast delivering raw, real, and absolutely gripping episodes every single week. I dig deep to uncover fascinating details of heinous true crime cases while exploring criminology and psychology theories. I take you into the absolute darkest corners of the human psyche, my favorite territory, and present cases like you've never heard them before. Follow and listen to Psychopedia everywhere you get your podcasts.
We'll dive back into the Masters. We got a lot of audio. There was... What's that?
He's ready to go. We're hot, Ron.
I thought that was a drop that we, like a golf ball hitting a shed or something.
Heads up. Look out.
There was one thing of the presser. I loved a lot of what Rory said, but there was one answer for me that I text Swag. I'm like, we got to play this. I loved this answer. So we'll get to that coming up. The Blazers had big news over the weekend, but something that we had kind of had on the radar, and then it came to a head this weekend. Tennessee and the quarterback have divorced each other.
They have.
Nico is no more. He's in the portal. Josh Heupel says, kick rocks, kid. Get out of here. We're not paying you $4 million. And Grant Ramey, our good friend of VolsQuest.com, is joining us. Grant, good morning. Thanks for hopping on with us in Portland. How did we get here? How did Tennessee and Nico split up?
Well, it's kind of a few months in the making, if you want to look at it that way. We kind of started first monitoring, I guess, the situation back in December. There's a December transfer portal window where that's really where a lot of the business gets done for that cycle. And there was kind of, you know, you're kind of watching the situation, trying to figure out if he's going to enter the portal, if he's going to stick around. There's always, you know, the rate for the QB is always changing and the market's always changing and everybody's wanting raises right and left. And nothing happened then. And kind of, it just kind of seemed like he's going to be fine. He's going to be here for his another season at Tennessee. And then Thursday, on Three's Pete Nakos reported that, you know, he was in negotiations for a new NIL deal contract. The family disputed that very publicly on Twitter or on X, whatever it's called these days. His dad, a family friend, somebody that's described as a family friend, disputed it as well. So there's no contract problems. They're happy at Tennessee, all this stuff. Then Friday morning, Tennessee has a practice. They have their spring game on Saturday. So they got their last spring practice before the spring game Friday morning. He doesn't show up. It's an unexcused absence. Nobody expected him not to be there. He didn't communicate why he wasn't there. Tennessee coaches could not get a hold of him through the day Friday. And I don't believe they heard from him until Friday night when he let them know that he had plans to enter the portal. And by that point, Josh Heupel, already Friday afternoon, had basically told his coaching staff, like, we can't do this. Like, he can't just not be here, and we just can't go on not knowing what's going on in this situation. So it's basically like we got to figure out what our options are and go from here and just move on. And that's what happened. That's what was reported Saturday. They had the spring game. They had two other quarterbacks on roster that handled their business in the spring game. And then Josh talked for probably 15 to 17 minutes after the spring game about the situation. He thanked Nico. He handled it very well. He's very patient with all the questions. He just kind of explained their viewpoint of it. And it all happened, you know, within a span of 48 hours. But, man, there's a lot of ground to cover there.
Yeah, it's interesting because we talked about this on Friday before it had been announced that he missed practice. I think that came out after we were off the air. And we had the discussion about, you know, just how would you feel if Nico was your quarterback? He undoubtedly was a highly touted kid coming out of high school. They gave him this massive NIL package. Didn't play until the bowl game his freshman year. Breaks through as a starter the next year, and they get off to such a hot start. The numbers weren't terrible, but you know, you want to be fair to him, or he's a redshirt freshman. I'm not asking you to win a Heisman Trophy, but at the same time, after a year like he had, coming back and asking for $2 million more dollars or whatever it was is an interesting negotiating tactic, and I kind of had the stance of, if he's asking for that, I'm letting him walk. Is this the right move for Tennessee to not meet his demands and ask for more money?
Yeah, it feels like that, just because you kind of wanted to see a little bit more of a prove-it kind of year here in 2025. I mean, he was decent in 2024. He had his moments. He ended the year with 4 touchdowns against Vanderbilt in the regular season finale to help clinch a playoff berth. Like, that was a big game. He had some moments. He beat Alabama at home. That's a very, very big deal for the Tennessee football program if you're a quarterback that beat Alabama. But, you know, he was the number one overall player in 2023. So that obviously sets a huge, you know, hype, expectations, all this stuff. And Tennessee needed that kind of guy to commit to the program, to sign with Tennessee. You know, Josh Heupel came here in 2021. He performed better than expected his first season. Then 2022 happens, and Hendon Hooker and Josh Heupel just catch lightning in a bottle, and it's just magic. And they score, you know, 40 points a game, and they beat Alabama, and they do all this stuff, and they win 11 games, and they come out of nowhere. And I think everybody just expected Nico to step in and be that next Hendon Hooker, basically, that put up crazy numbers. And it just didn't happen. They were shut out in the first half of 3 straight games last year. Like, that just doesn't happen. That's not supposed to be the Josh Heupel offense. It's supposed to be explosive, big plays, big points, all that stuff. And everybody's just kind of wondering, when is it going to happen? When is it going to happen? Like, he looked great in the season opener, and then he just kind of struggled to hit guys down the field a little bit later on in the year. So I think it was right for Tennessee to say, we paid you a bunch up front, and we're willing to talk about more money down the line, but let's just see something in 2020. I don't know if that's their viewpoint, but it seems like a logical one for me to have.
Yeah, Grant Ramey is our guest here, VolsQuest on3.com. You can find him. He's got a good article up right now. He's got a lot of good articles up, but there's one about Nico. Basically, there's an NIL lawyer that Grant writes about that's like, yo, his kid's getting bad advice. He says this kid seems like a really good kid, but he's just allowing handlers to kind of run things. I'm curious of a couple things. One, Oregon, the mighty Oregon Ducks were kind of mentioned as internet rumor and negotiating factor, but that turns out to not be true, or Oregon says, nah, we're not going to pay $4 million for a quarterback. We've got one coming in. Where do you think Nico is going to eye or land now, and what has been the overall reaction from Tennessee? Because I did like Josh Heupel's comments of, like, no one person is bigger than the program. But now, like, who plays the position? Because you were expecting Nico to grow. So where are Vols fans on the position? And is there an area or a school that you would kind of maybe keep an eye on with where Nico could land?
Josh Heupel has had a 100% approval rating from Tennessee fans in this situation. I think Tennessee fans at times were frustrated with Nico. Maybe they expected more than what Nico was able to do his redshirt freshman year. But once the negotiations turned public Thursday night, he started losing the fan base quickly, because he got a huge deal to start with at Tennessee. He was kind of the poster boy for the first big NIL quarterback, NIL era, 5-star guy, quarterback that was going to get paid. And his money got leaked from the start for whatever reason when he signed with Tennessee. So that's part of the problem. And what the NIL lawyer is saying, and I agree with, he needs a professional agent to be handling this. I don't know who leaked the negotiation stuff on Thursday, but it makes no sense for Tennessee to leak it. It makes no sense for the collective that Tennessee works with to leak it, because it just hurts the quarterback. It hurts the play. I think somebody from his circle might have leaked it, thinking Tennessee fans would side with him and create more leverage for Nico, when the exact opposite happened, and that kind of blew up in his face if that was the plan. But where he goes from here, I think UCLA has been mentioned as kind of maybe an early team to watch. I think Texas Tech as well has been mentioned as an early team to watch. I think when people first heard the news, they thought maybe USC or maybe Oregon, but I don't think he's going to be able to pull off that kind of move. So I think you look at UCLA, you look at Texas Tech, figure out what happens there, and then kind of go from there.
Last one for you, and we'll get you out of, because we appreciate the time, Grant. We really do. Do you think he ultimately gets the amount of money he's seeking, or does he end up with tail between legs, taking a lesser amount and going to a non-Josh Heupel program, which will be like, what is that going to mean for your development?
I think he might get more than he made at Tennessee, which is, I think, around 2.5 is what people have been talking about. I don't know the exact number myself, but that's where kind of most people have been fixated, around 2.5. And then obviously people are talking about him wanting $4 million in the new deal. I don't know if he's going to get all the way up to $4 million. I think he could get a little bit more that he was going to make at Tennessee, but also at the same time, we're sitting here on April, what is it, April 14th. It's going to be a tough time to transition. Like, you're going into a very short summer, a very short offseason now, because you've waited until the spring portal to make your move. Mm-hmm. If you want to make an impact, you got to move in December and have a full offseason with your new program. So he's going to get more money. I don't know what situation he's walking into and where he ends up landing ultimately, but he's going to have a quick turnaround and have a really good summer and a really good preseason to kind of live up to the expectations and the hype of this next stop, regardless of whatever money he gets.
Well, as a quarterback, anytime you can go from Josh Heupel to Deshaun Foster, you should run and jump at that opportunity. Good stuff from Grant Ramey, VolsQuest.com and On3 Production. He does great work. He's a good friend about Tennessee stuff. Thanks for hopping on this morning. Give us the lowdown on Nico, man. We appreciate it.
Good to talk to y'all again. See you.
All right, there we go. Grant Ramey of VolsQuest.com. A massive college football story.
It's a very big deal.
A playoff team just lost their starting quarterback, who was a redshirt freshman coming in for his sophomore season.
And by the way, an SEC school.
SEC school.
Which has a lot of money to spend, and gave this guy a $7 million NIL deal, and he might transfer to Texas Tech or UCLA.
Let's talk about this. Is this just a one-off? Why was the family so adamant about denying this initial report, and Josh Heupel coming out the hero to a lot of people that love college football, especially Tennessee? We'll get to that coming up next on The Fan. We'll get to the Trailblazers, our Blazers, with some big news over the weekend. They beat Bronny.
Damn right they did.
They bludgeoned.
When's the coin flip? How long do we have to wait for the coin flip?
I don't know when the coin flip is.
When does that take place? Do we know?
The coin flip history is about the same history as us drafting a center.
We got a great coin flip.
It's got to be within the next month. Because
it has to be. The lottery's on the 12th, right?
Like, yeah. Oh, is it that early this year?
I thought it was. Yeah, May 12th.
Oh, that's sooner. Usually it's the first day of the conference finals is what I remember.
May 12th is the date I've heard twice on broadcast.
No, I don't.
So I'll verify that.
No, I don't doubt you.
But it's funny to think that in a month we won't even be to the conference finals yet. I love that thought in the back of my head,
What if the Blazers get the 10th pick? Like, what if that is they lose the coin flip because we've lost the important coin flips?
Who cares? We don't need stars. We already have our stars.
You're right.
We don't
get to that coming up.
Any more stars. We're starred out. We have too many stars.
I'm glad you guys heard all the same things I heard.
No, I text a lot of people. I text multiple people in my life that are... I met one of our listeners who he bleeds the Blazers. He's got a Blazer tattoo, Jay, at the Hoop Summit. Really nice dude. And I'm like, are you more a dirt? Or are you,
you angry? Are you angry pants or happy
angry pants?
And he wasn't angry, but he did like do a, no idea what we're doing.
Give him one of those. Well, I met a listener on Friday, too. I was taking the dog for a walk. A little nerve-wracking to have somebody pull up alongside you in a car. But shout out to Chad, who did. Pulled up and was like, hey, are you dirt? And I was like, this could go wrong. Like, are you an angry Blazer fan? Should I say yes to this? Hey, I love the show, man.
I'm Andy. Yeah. No, it's not me.
Never
I'm
heard
Andy.
Of dirt. Andrew. Never heard of the guy. Andrew. I go by Andrew, actually. Thank you very much. No, it's delightful to meet him.
I want to read this from listener David. I think he's asking a valid question. Why is Nico the bad guy? Coaches do this same S, and he and his people were trying to do it. Coaches do this every year. Why is Nico the bad guy? It has been interesting. Our buddy Josh Pate came out and was like, he was pretty strongly on Heupel's side and anti this. It's been watching the narratives of the Nico fallout from how this happened at Tennessee.
I don't necessarily think that Nico is the bad guy. I think this is a example of the free market working. Mm-hmm. You think you're worth something? Your employer says, no, you're not. And he says, okay, see you later. To me, that's the open market. Now he gets to go see if somebody else will pay him. I side mostly with Tennessee for two different reasons. One, I agree with them not bending to his demands. Nico was a redshirt freshman, and so there's a balance here of like, I'm not trying to kill the kid, but when you're asking for $4 million, we got to dive in and criticize your play a little bit.
Yeah.
Like, his games, he had 19 touchdown passes last year.
Five picks.
So the numbers, I mean, it's not terrible. When you look at his numbers versus winning teams last year, so not Chattanooga and UTEP, who 8 of his touchdown passes came against combined.
Well, 4 came from just Vanderbilt.
Just Vanderbilt at the end of the season. 12 of his 19 came against Chattanooga, Kent State, UTEP, and Vanderbilt.
Mm-hmm.
He was 85th in QBR, 88th in yards per attempt, 80th in completion percentage, and in the 6 games against winning teams last year, he had 5 touchdowns and 3 picks. And you're asking for a $2 million raise? It's one thing if you're you know, have the Caleb Williams freshman season, and you're like, holy crap, this guy's incredible. He wants $2 million more dollars. Like, sure, buddy, we'll pay you, man. We want to keep you around. I don't blame Tennessee at all for saying, like, no, we're not going to do it. And where I mostly side with them is the shady way in which he handled this. Like, if you wanted
well,
to
his,
get...
his representative, sure, let's his be fair family, to him, right?
His family. Like, I mean, he could. I mean, you could put your foot down at some point and say, no, I want to stay here, Dad. Don't shop me around.
Look,
because the reports are that his dad was openly calling other head coaches and programs saying, well, you got money? You got the money? You got the money?
I don't know any inner working of their family at all. I struggle saying his name right half the time. That's why I just call him Nico.
Put a question mark on the end of it. It's a little bit easier.
But I am telling you, in some families and the way that they are raised, that, what you just said, is not how that works. Why don't you just stop it? Because his entire life, Dad is in charge.
Yeah.
And yeah, he's in college, and you can say this and that. I have grown-ass friends who, because of the way their culture is, they still, in their mid to late 30s, won't do certain things because mom and dad don't want them. It is a much different situation. So we don't know if it's as easy for him to just say, no, Dad, I'm not.
Yeah,
his dad and his representatives feel this was the best course of action. So I don't actually like saying he is the bad guy. I just think this is what this world has been brought on by itself.
Yeah.
College sports, the AAU, the 7-on-7s, there are some really good ones. But there's a lot of shady stuff that happens, man. And I think this kind of breeds into some of the culture of youth sports and the way that these athletes are coming up through the pipelines. It's not him being a bad guy. It's the fact that this world was created by college football themselves and his representatives. They may end up being right, by the way, because Tennessee didn't pay. Well, what if UCLA gives them $1 million raise?
I mean, they very well could. Texas Tech could as well.
Then they win.
Yeah.
Like, you can say he's making a mistake and it's not going to work out, or we could say he made $1 million more.
Sure.
He wins.
I think the question would be, what's more important to you long term? Is it being in the best system? Is it being developed? Is it playing in the NFL? Or is it making the most amount of money you can in a short amount of time?
Why can't he have it all? Why can't he say,
I'm not saying
that
you can't.
Best player, I can be good anywhere, sure, and I can still go to the NFL and make more money.
I mean, he wasn't very good last year. So he was the best player in high school. He's the number two or number one quarterback, mm-hmm, depending on the ranking and the metrics that you looked at. His first year as a starter was, again, it was fine. He was not the number one quarterback in the country. In fact, if you look up and down SEC rosters last year, you'd probably say he was the eighth or ninth best quarterback in the SEC.
Somewhere around there.
Again, yeah. I'm not trying to be, he's a redshirt freshman.
Right.
I'm not asking you to do more than that, but you're the one that's demanding more money and your family is, so we're going to have to judge your play accordingly. That would be the only thing that I would criticize of the move. He might be right in the short term, and I think he will. Somebody's going to pay him.
Mm-hmm.
Texas Tech has paid a bazillion dollars this offseason to improve their roster. They are all in on NIL. They've
been
in the transfer portal.
Yep.
They've added a ton of guys. UCLA is desperate. We saw them do it with a package for Dante Moore a couple of years ago when they signed him at the last second, flipping him from Oregon. They have money down there to spend, and they're looking to make a splash. Let's bring the kid back out to California, back to the West Coast, and maybe he'll thrive there. So he might end up in the long term having both. I just didn't like the way that essentially it was a shopping behind the scenes. Whereas your take on it, and I agree with you completely, for a lot of these kids, like, I have no issue with guys wanting to test the open market every year. You have that ability. There is no binding contract. There's no collective bargaining agreement. There's
I think
no
more
buyout.
Should.
There's not a 4-year deal here. It's a, you can get out of this crap whenever you want to. And if you want to hit the open market every offseason, by all means, do it, man. Maximize your value. There's no guarantee that Nico's going to be an NFL quarterback for 12 years. This might be the only opportunity that he has to capitalize, mm-hmm, on his athletic success. So I get that. I just hate the shady nature in which they went about it. If you want to go into the portal, say, hey, Tennessee, you're welcome to bid on me, but I want to go test the waters and see how much I make. And if you can match the same offer, by all means, I'll come back to Knoxville. Calling around different programs across the country and saying, hey, do you want to offer my kid? Hey, do you want to offer my kid? We get mad all the time when coaches tamper, and this is the other side of that story, where it was the parents tampering with other programs while his kid was still on the roster at Tennessee.
You want to test the waters? Final thing, I just didn't like how publicly they were attacking P. Pete Nakos.
Yes, it was. This is fake news. Why would anybody report this? It's like, no, it's not. It clearly was.
Yeah, clearly. Like, 24 hours later, you guys all look stupid doing that. So
the tie-in, too, by the way, is with Lanning, that the reports were that Nico called Oregon. His dad called Oregon and said, hey, you got $4 million for my kid? He'll come to Eugene if you got $4 million. And Dan Lanning was like, nope, we're good. And then he called Josh Heupel and notified Josh, like, hey, this dude's dad's calling programs around the country.
We'll see where he ends up landing. But Nico is out at Tennessee. Tennessee says thanks, but no thanks. We'll see where he ends up going. Loaded second hour. The Blazers announcing contract extension for Chauncey Billups. We got a lot of audio to get to. What are your thoughts from Chauncey Billups and Joe Cronin getting the three-year extensions? Talk about that hour two. Dirt and Sprague on the Fan.
Hey, this is Richard Deitch, the host of the Sports Media Podcast. If you're interested in what's happening with all the places where you consume sports, the Sports Media Podcast has you covered.
I've been turning down interviews all week. Hoda Kotb reached out, Oprah, George Stephanopoulos. So I said no. I was booked on the Deitch podcast before the Taylor Swift phenomenon. I must live up to my responsibility.
Listen wherever you get your podcasts.